Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Some interesting sound from Daniel Jeremiah saying the Seahawks are built to win now. But my question for you, my question for myself, and my question for listeners, what needs to be different in 2021 if they want to avoid repeating the same old end to their season? The Seahawks have been one of the winningest regular season teams, and yet a team that has won, what, Jake, three playoff games since their last Super Bowl appearance? Something weird like that. It just doesn't make any sense for a team with a franchise quarterback that's been so successful in the regular season to constantly just be ousted in the playoffs so early. So let's look at what some of those commonalities could be. First, though, let's take a listen, cut number five, to what Daniel Jeremiah had to say.
Well, it's a team that's you know, ready to win right now. So I get it. And I think you can look inside the division for some people that maybe kind of roll their eyes at what the Rams have done, which is basically just forego the first round for the foreseeable future. And yet they're a team that's right there every year. So I think it's knowing where you are in the process. If Russell was, you know, 23 years old and they were just getting started, I would maybe question, you know, jettisoning the draft and bringing in so many veteran guys. But I think they're trying to go hunt down another ring here while they've got, you know, Russell still in his prime here. So I get it. I get it from a philosophical standpoint.
That full interview with Daniel Jeremiah, I'm on the Wyman and Bob podcast, if you guys want to take a listen to that. But let's move forward with just that bit of information, Jake. First of all, I think both of us would agree the Seahawks in win now mode. Anytime that you've made that kind of trade Jamal Adams, you're paying Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner that kind of money. And not only that, but both Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner getting older, you are in win now mode. Goes without saying. But it feels like that for a little while. It feels like it's been that way for a while. The same things keep going wrong. So you and I have created our list of what needs to change, kind of the biggest commonalities that we found. And then I'll turn to the Mac and Jack's text line also, 710-710. So why don't you go ahead and kick us off?
Yeah, I think that, you know, you're looking at what does this team need to do differently this year in order for them to finally get over that hump and finally for them to get to an NFC championship game, for them to get back to a Super Bowl with a roster that you feel like every year has a chance to be competitive, what needs to be different? What needs to change? And for me, one of the biggest things is that defensively, they need to find their true identity and make their presence felt across the league. You saw that with the Legion of Boom, and they need to do it in their own way, a new way. But as you heard John Schneider talk about Trey Brown with Danny and Gallant last week, saying, look, we need to get back to finding guys that have edge, that bring a little something extra to the table outside of just what they do physically on the field. Do they have that determination, that grit, that feistiness, that not back down from any one type of mentality? And one of the other things that I feel like they need to make their presence felt is a defense that has speed, that can run and hit with physicality. When they get hit, they know that they're in for a long 60 minutes of football. And then the other side of that is this a group that can generate and force turnovers? There's a difference, Stacy, from what the Seahawks have been in the past few years versus forcing turnovers. They have, ironically, been one of the league leaders at different points in time in the season, given the past couple years, Stacy, in turnovers. But they have been more turnovers by mistake, turnovers by opportunity, in the sense that, okay, here's a tip pass, and I just happen to be right there, and I'm making the interception, rather than having somebody that is a ball hawk that is going and taking the football away, or a defensive end that can turn the corner and generate that strip sack fumble, forcing them to make the turnovers. And the difference between that is sometimes you need a little bit of luck in the NFL. You need a little bit of luck to come your way. And sometimes things fall in your lap and you can win that way. But the other part of it, when you play against elite competition, you get into the playoffs, Stacy, you need a group that can force mistakes, that can force turnovers. And that's something that they have to get back. They have to find and get back to.
Now, you also looked at the offensive side of things.
Yeah, the other side of it too, you flip over to the offensive side of the ball, is I feel like this offensive system, in which I am very excited about with Shane Waldron, is the need to feature a diverse attack. As we saw last year, the first half of the season, they were the number one offense in the NFL. The number one offense. And they looked unstoppable. Russell Wilson looked like a man on fire, and DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, they were unguardable. Well, some of the issues that you found is that they weren't diverse enough in the sense that they took everybody by surprise in the first half of the season. They began to play better opponents, better defenses in the second half of the season, and did not make adjustments to their style of play before the game even started, and did not make adjustments in game when you saw that it wasn't working. And it was because a lack of diversity in their offense, the lack of ability to find answers and make those adjustments on the fly. And I think that when you look at what they're able to do with a diverse attack, is not just be able to go to their bread and butter, which is the deep passing game, Stacey, but it's being able to get Chris Carson going again in the running game. It's about being able to spread the ball out short to intermediate so that your playmakers can get the ball and generate yards after catch through your play designs. And that will inevitably, Stacey, if you're getting the ball out of Russell Wilson's hands faster, quicker, helping him make snapshot decisions with the ball in his hands, then you're also lessening the sack totals. You're lessening the amount of hits that he is taking, and that obviously was a friction point this offseason.
What about people who say, like, well, what Russell Wilson does is limited? Like, when I've said, oh, one thing that the offense can do is incorporate your tight ends and running backs in the pass game more, which would imply some passes, either intermediate passes or potentially passes over the middle, people have been like, well, Russell Wilson can't do that.
I would smile at you and say I just strongly disagree. because I think that's ludicrous. Now, does every quarterback have their own weaknesses, things that they're not as strong at as other quarterbacks? Yes, absolutely. But I would say that in this offense with Russell Wilson, he hasn't been given the opportunity to show you otherwise. This scheme has been the same scheme for 9 seasons, just with a different spin or a different twist with it, with the leadership of Daryl Bevel versus Brian Schottenheimer. You now have an entirely different system, a different philosophy, a different way of thinking, and now I think that you can really truly make your judgment, so to speak, on what he can and cannot do based off of what this offense is going to be and the style that they're going to have. They will utilize every level of this field, and there will be more of a feature in terms of the short to intermediate pass game, unlike that we've ever seen here in Seattle.
Maybe it's because of the collapse that Seattle had on offense in the second half of last season, but that's where I started with my list of where this team needs to change, or basically, like, how can they avoid getting into the same issue, mistake, running into the same wall, whatever it might be. When you look at the games that they've lost in the postseason, there's been different reasons for a lot of them, right? Like, there's been no one common denominator per se. They struggled to contain Zeke Ansa Zeke Elliott in a loss to the Cowboys. They also have had interceptions. They struggled to get going on defense. Last year, they struggled on offense and had turnovers, right? Like, there's been a myriad issues for this team in the postseason, and the margin of error gets just so small when you're at that level that you can't really afford those mistakes. That said, it was hard not to look at offense, just with some recency bias, as being the first place where you can change. I think I did this as well with the knowledge that the NFL as a whole, Jake, is changing the way that it either prioritizes offense or the way that it attacks on offense. I think there just needs to be a sense of urgency that at times you don't have, whether it's with your win in the fourth kind of outlast the other guy's mentality. Yeah, that's going to work against a lot of teams in the regular season. When you're going against the best teams in the NFL, they aren't going to make mistakes. You make more mistakes than they do at times. So you don't always get to just outlast them. And also adapt when your offense isn't working. Like, I constantly flash back, Jake, to that game against the Giants and just think, like, why didn't you look at that game and change what you were doing? Why didn't you look at, we cannot attack deep. They're taking the deep ball away. We're struggling against too high coverage. Like there's a way to fix this. Chris Carson is healthy. We have ways to fix this, and they didn't do it. Like, I constantly look back at that as basically a failure, where it felt like your offense was heading in two different directions with what you wanted to do versus what you were doing. I don't know what it was. Maybe it was a disagreement already between Schottenheimer, Wilson, and Carroll of some kind of, you know, combination of those factors. Whatever it was, your offense was not right. That Giants game was one of the most perfect examples of it, where it just looked lackluster and dead. And you need to change that. You need a sense of urgency, and that includes urgency when something isn't working.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. And I think that when you talk about that urgency, that's why we were such a high proponent of changing the way that you do things from an offensive standpoint and offensive philosophy, Stacey, to the point where you are in more of an attack mode. And I think that worked out favorably for them. And that's why I think it's important that they have a diverse passing attack, because at some point, you're going to run into a wall. You're going to run into defenses making adjustments. And I think that when you are able to have somebody who is your play caller, who is your offensive caller, that has the ability to understand their system so well and so intimately that they know exactly what the adjustments are, I think that that's when you have something special, and you have something that you are able to create a dynamic offense, not just for a portion of the season, but all season long.
I got into a really interesting conversation with this show called The Larsh Cast with 650 Sportsnet up in Canada. And basically they were talking about the commonalities of the teams that were in the NFL, actually NFL and AFL or AFC and NFC conference championships this year. And the biggest and most obvious commonality is high scoring offenses, right? Green Bay, Kansas City, and Tampa Bay, all averaging around 30 points per game. Green Bay leading the pack there. But the biggest difference in the final four conference teams was defense. Tampa Bay's defense, far and away the best defense. It was not close, particularly with that defensive line. So my second point, Jake, is one that feels somewhat out of Seattle's control, but I know is important. And that's just making sure that defensive line is competitive and healthy. You need impact players and consistent impact plays from the defensive line, especially when it comes to the pass rush. That has been the difference. When they say defense wins championships, like, that's when that comes into play, right? That's when you look at what's the difference between these teams. Well, Tampa can throw the ball all over the field, but also their defense can keep you from doing it.
Right. And that is a huge part of the equation of great defensive football. And everybody with the Legion of Boom era focuses on the secondary. They focus on the great players, the elite players of Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor, Richard Sherman, as well as they should. But such an underrated aspect of that defense was their defensive line. And when you talk about forcing turnovers, generating that consistent pressure, that's what the Seahawks were. That's what they were able to do with Chris Clemens and Cliff Averill and Michael Bennett, Clinton McDonald, Brandon Meebane. You could go down the line, and they had such great depth there, Stacey, that they were able to generate that consistent pressure where if you go back and watch the film in some of those games, you're looking at an Aaron Rodgers in his prime who is passing up wide open receivers. Why? Because he feels the pressure.
Yeah.
Because he knows that he has to play with a sense of urgency that he doesn't want to play with. His clock and his mental clock is sped up. And I think that is something that the Seahawks have tried to prioritize this offseason. We'll see if it comes together or not. But in terms of their defensive line and their depth, it's the best that it's been thus far over the last 3 to 4 years, and we'll see if it pans out for them. But as you described, they have to have that. They have to have that consistent pass rush, that consistent disruptive defensive line play in order for them to get over that hump when they play those elite teams, those playoff caliber teams.
Some of the most popular answers on the Mac and Jack's text line, 710-710, also concern the offense. Creativity on offense was a really popular one, Jake. Getting the ball out of Russ's hands quicker, whether it means adding more weapons or whatever it is. And someone else said their answer from the 509, for starters, sign KJ like yesterday. So that's one person's answer. Love KJ Wright. Got to shout that out.
That is the difference. Now, KJ Wright, just so you know, KJ Wright has been here. He's been on this roster. He's been a part of that. So is KJ Wright, you know, is there something different about his play that can help get them over the hump? That's what I would like to know for those that are saying KJ Wright would help get them over the hump. Now, I think that some of these answers in terms of just offensive creativity, all of those things, look, I definitely agree with that. I think that they ran out of that. I think offensive juice-wise, brain trust-wise, they ran out of that in the second half of the season, and I think that that's ultimately why they went in this new direction with Shane Waldron as your new offensive coordinator. But really, it also comes down to execution. It comes down to play. It comes down to the ability that you have in your star quarterback in Russell Wilson to be able to have him operating on all cylinders and to be able to get him into a rhythm and feeling at his best. And I think that's something that you may say, look, he gets paid $35 million. He should be there. Yes, he should always be at that level. But every great offensive system, every great quarterback generally has an offense that allows them to get into that rhythm. Find a way to get them into that rhythm. That's all you need for them to be able to light that spark and to be able to play at that high level. And unfortunately, they were not able to get out of a rut or get out of that rut and help him get into that rhythm in the second half of the season. And Russell Wilson, I can promise you, is highly motivated to do his part and do whatever he can to make sure that second half of the season never happens again.
All right, that is a look at the Seattle Seahawks. Let's take a look around the rest of the league with your NFL headlines. Tom Pelissero reports that multiple teams have shown interest in linebacker Shaquem Griffin, saying a new team could view him as a full-time pass rusher. Jake, I think that Shaquem Griffin showed at times he can certainly be that guy. I think that he could obviously make a good addition to any team on special teams, and we've seen him as a situational pass rusher really excel. I wonder though if those Griffin brothers are so close, I do wonder if it would incentivize Shaquem just to be able to stay where Shaquille is in Jacksonville.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I ultimately believe that's where his landing spot is going to be. And I think that sometimes, you know, Tom Pelissero, you have these reports that come out. Sometimes they're player sparked, their agent sparked. Hey, we want to make sure that the NFL knows that Shaquem Griffin is being talked to by multiple teams here. And we'll ultimately see what happens for Griffin. I'm rooting for him. I think it would be a tremendous story if he was to remain in Jacksonville to continue to keep playing with Shaquille. Such a great story, and it was so much fun to watch them play together here in Seattle. But I think time will tell, and also time will tell if he gets the opportunity to have that role as a full-time pass rusher. Now, he's not going to be an every-down starter, but can he be a situational guy in this league? I think that he's shown that he could do that pretty successfully, actually, given the right use of him in the right situations.
Even though the Miami Dolphins seemingly got their quarterback of the future a while back when they drafted Tua Tagovailoa, I think people were wondering if they would use that 3 overall pick to get another guy and take another shot. However, that was over when they ended up trading it to San Francisco. So what's up with Tua? What's his future look like with the Dolphins? Dolphins head coach Brian Flores says Tua's doing everything necessary to make some improvements. So he says about the switch to Ryan Fitzpatrick back in week 15, quote, "We put him in, we're in a playoff chase. At that point, it's, hey, we've got to do whatever we've got to do to try to win. But no, my confidence isn't shaken in him being Tua, obviously." So Tua's still the guy with the Dolphins.
I don't think that this is going to change, right? They had an opportunity in this draft, if they really truly were iffy about Tua Tagovailoa, to be able to try and get their guy of the future. The jury is still early on Tua, right? And I think that this is something that they have to go through as an organization here in year two to really truly see what he can do. Last year, he was coming off of injury. Last year, no, he didn't have the same type of rookie year as Joe Burrow. But I don't think that was the expectation for him to have that. You're now entering an offseason where the Dolphins did everything that they could to give him legitimate weapons at his disposal. There's really not a whole lot of excuses for Tua not to perform better in terms of generating explosive plays down the field. And I have full faith that Tua is working hard this offseason, much like Brian Flores said. But ultimately, it's going to be about how he can produce on the field. And that's going to be the big question for the Dolphins. And in terms of where their success is, I would hate to see Brian Flores put together this tremendous roster and to be able to have this rebuild so quickly turned around for this organization and be hampered by Tua Tagovailoa not being able to come out on the other side and lead this team, because they are, talent-wise on this roster, Stacey, a playoff-caliber team.
They've also got like a bajillion first-round picks over the next couple years. Going from one young quarterback to another, new Jets quarterback Zach Wilson, presumably going to be their starter, but he says, no, that position has to be earned. So this is the full quote. He's asked, do you have anything to prove before winning the starting job? And just about getting acclimated to the new environment. He said, my focus is to learn the offense, keep getting better every day, do what I can with the guys around me, and I think the rest takes care of itself. In this position, the coaches want to play the best player, and that position's got to be earned. I got to go in there, and I got to make sure I do what I'm supposed to do, and that will take care of itself. You know a lot about Zach Wilson. You were talking about his potential as a top pick prior to this season at BYU. What's his ceiling? Like, how good do you think Zach Wilson can be with New York?
What's his ceiling? His ceiling is being an absolute star in this league, being, you know, one of the next great up-and-coming quarterbacks in this league. I mean, he has an entertainment factor. You go back and watch the highlight tape at BYU. If he's able to have that same level of playmaking ability and make some of the same throws in the NFL, it will go bonkers, especially in New York with the Jets. I mean, he has tremendous talent. It's going to be a matter of how quickly Robert Saleh can turn that organization around. How quickly can they get better personnel in? I love what they did in the draft. Now, what have they done in free agency? Now, what can they surround Zach Wilson with? And you're also having a brand new offensive coordinator in Mike LaFleur come in there and give his shot as he's 33 years old, I believe,
as the offensive coordinator there.
So. It's crazy. So now it's really what is around Zach Wilson, because I believe, look, he's going to say all the right things. He's going to have the right quotes. But ultimately, it's going to be come down to, can he follow his words? Can he put his head down, not focus on what's being said around him or the media hype or the media machine that is New York City? And can he just focus on his job? Just do your job every single day. Focus on that, and I think everything will take care of itself, because I do think that Zach Wilson has everything it takes to be a star in this league.
Now, we were talking about Mike LaFleur and talking about Tim Tebow in NFL headlines. Weird fact, same age, both those guys 33 years old. One trying to be a tight end with the Jags and the other in a coaching position with the Jets. Very weird stuff. All right, despite what you saw this past weekend, Mariners fans should be excited about where this club is going. We'll tell you why next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Seems very weird to be telling you guys that after this past weekend, you should be excited about where the Mariners are going, considering that series against the Rangers. But there is reason to be excited, because, Jake, you were out there at Cheney Stadium watching Jared Kelenic, watching these guys in the minors, and they are not that far away from being with this ball club. So there is, one, a good reason to be excited, and two, some reason to be a little concerned about the foundation, but we're going to get to that part in a second. First, what was it like being out there and watching Jared? Because did you also see Logan Gilbert, or did you just go for the one night to see Kelenic?
I just went for the one night to see Kelenic. I was a little bummed that I wasn't able to go Friday night, which is when Gilbert pitched. But we got there Saturday and was able to watch that. Also, Cal Raleigh was sitting out that game as well. So I was really hoping to at least see two out of the three. But it was still a great night. Rainiers won. They put on a show. They scored seven runs. So it was a fun night at the ballpark.
And DJ, you were looking up some of the stats just for the kind of full spectrum of guys that are soon to be seen prospects with the Mariners. Do you have some of those?
Yeah, and we can talk about Jared Kelenic, you know, Julio Rodriguez as well, you know, seven hits, two doubles, one triple, three RBIs already. But the pitching in this system is just stacked. Mm-hmm. We talked about Logan Gilbert at the top of the show, five innings on Friday, four strikeouts, zero walks, only one in a run. But then you have someone like 2019 second-round pitcher Brandon Williamson, who DePoto has said is kind of like his man crush in this organization. He went four innings while striking out nine forever and allowing zero runs. You got 2017 second-rounder Sam Carlson. He pitched for the first time in 1,390 days due to Tommy John surgery. Recorded four innings and seven strikeouts, allowing only two hits and zero runs. Isaiah Campbell, who's a 2019 third-round pick from Arkansas, had a good outing in relief as well. And so the pitching in this system, I think, we can talk about the outfielders and Kelenic and Rodriguez and Noel V. Marte, who's a couple years away at shortstop. But the pitching in this system, I think, is just absolutely stacked.
Considering the state of the rotation, that's really good news. I know that of all of those guys, Gilbert's the only one you're really expecting to see this season for at least a good portion of the season. But there's good and bad news when it comes to the club as it is right now in the bigs, Jake. I was using the metaphor of the train kind of going down the tracks. I liked yours about the foundation, though. The Mariners' offense as it is right now needs to be better. That's the bad news. Like, it's not great. And the guys that were good for you, like Ty France, have kind of fallen off. Last 15, Ty is 9 of 57, no home runs, 2 RBI, has struck out 12 times, batting 158. Like, that's not great. The good news, I guess, the silver lining of that, I go back to your metaphor, like, you just need the foundation. You don't need to turn the guys that are on this, that are in this lineup right now, into a championship caliber team. You just need them to be the foundation because you've got those pieces coming. And so far, those pieces look good.
Yeah, they do. They look very good. And so we still have to keep in mind, right? And we had Aaron Goldsmith on earlier today. And if you missed that, go to 710sports.com. Go to our podcast and download that. It was an hour or two. He was fantastic. But, you know, one of the phrase that he said that I thought was very appropriate is 2021 is really about where the presence meets the future. And you're starting to have some of those future pieces come up with this big league roster. And as you start to see more and more of those, that's when this team starts to really turn the corner into not just, hey, are they a team that's competing for a playoff spot or a team that's coming out of their tear down rebuild, but that they're actually a permanent mainstay in the AL, right? And that they are somebody to be feared or somebody to be looked at. And I think that when you look at currently where the Mariners are at, you mentioned that foundation of what I was talking about. That's what this group has to prove themselves at the big league level that they can be. Because right now, you look at what's going on in the farm system and what Jerry DePoto has done, turning around their farm system into one of the best farm systems in baseball. These guys are, so far in opening weekend, they have been able to really put on a show and display their talent and what they can be on full display. And that should bring excitement to Mariners fans here a year, two, three down the line, because this isn't just a rebuilding process for this year or the following year. This is a long-term process, and it's going to take multiple years, and hopefully you can see this team start to really be competitive this year and be even more competitive the following year, the more and more you see these young stars, these young talented players come up on this level.
Yeah, not every piece is going to work out, but it certainly sounds like the One Piece fans are most excited to see Jared Kelenic getting off to a really strong start. Can we also, we have a minute left here, we need to talk, Jake, about the fact that Jared Kelenic's biggest moments have come at the most insane times. Like, let's go back to like winter spring with spring training. Scott Servais doing an interview during a game and saying it was after the Kevin Mather stuff. Everyone's talking about the service time manipulation with Jared Kelenic. Kelenic does an interview with USA Today. He's up to bat. Scott says they'll tell us when they're ready. We're talking about these guys in the minors. Bam, Jared hits a home run. I mean, the other night, offense for the Mariners is floundering, not doing so well. And what do you have? You have two home runs for Jared Kelenic. It's weird. Like, I don't know some kind of magic that he's doing, but the timing of it is all incredibly strange.
No, it is. But it's on point. And when the eyes are on him the most, and I wouldn't say the pressure, because there's really not a whole lot of pressure on Jared Kelenic, right? He's 21 years old. He is, expectations for him are high, but at the same time, he's not looked at as the savior of Mariners baseball for this year, right? Mm-hmm. It's more about how quickly can he come up. That's the question. And how quickly can he be ready to make that jump before the team is putting him in a bad position, before they, quote-unquote, rush his development. And Kelnick, along the way, as you'd said, has hit, has played successfully at every single level through the minors. And when the conversation has been the brightest, or when the spotlight has been the brightest, and the conversation is heating up around Jared Kelnick and what he can be, he seems to perform at his best. And that's why, from the very beginning, Stacey, I have said that I believe Jared Kelnick is a different breed, that he is a different style of player mentally, physically, and that's why I am very optimistic that he will succeed when he gets up to this level, because of that special quality, that it factor that he possesses.
All right, you've got questions, we've got answers. Get your questions in now for What I Need to Know. Seahawks, Mariners, whatever it is, send them in now to the Mac and Jack's text line, 710-710. Before I see too many of them, I've been seeing questions. Is Stacey in her bathroom? 710sports.com/video is where you can watch us in our stream. And no, I'm not in my bathroom, you guys. God, stop sending
Come
that
on,
question
Stacey,
in. I'm not in my bathroom.
Be honest.
I'm
be
not
honest
in my
with
bathroom. Send your questions in, 710-710. What I Need to Know, coming your way next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
He's Jake Heaps, I'm Stacey Rost. It is What I Need to Know, brought to you by All Red Heating, Cooling, Electric. Now, there are some good questions on here, minus every single question that keeps asking me if I'm in a bathroom. You guys took it, you ran with it, I see you. I said I'm not in my bathroom, and someone said, then whose bathroom are you in? I've had enough of it. But, Jake, there is a question here. What I Need to Know. You can't tell me this isn't Curtis Rogers. Why is Kent better than UP or SeaTac? First of all, nothing is better than SeaTac. Someone tried to insult me once on Twitter by making fun of me being from SeaTac. I was like, I'm not offended. I rip SeaTac all day.
That is the wrong attack on Stacey. Let me tell you.
The wrong avenue. What I Need to Know. Jake, you mentioned being out at Cheney Stadium this past weekend. So what's one thing that stood out to you about Jared Kelnick?
Has anybody noticed that he's got a really unique batting stance?
It's got like a little bit of like a wiggle.
He has
a Juan
wiggle
Soto
to him.
A little bit.
He's up there and he's like, he's in his stance and he's wiggling his upper body. He's moving his hips. He's, you know, taking a page out of Happy Gilmore. It's all in the hips, Stacey.
It is interesting. It's I don't mind it.
It's unique.
It's unique. It's not unique. A bad one though. It's not like I'm not watching it thinking like that's a weird stance.
No, but it's a unique one, to the point where you know how Ichiro had his point and then lift up of the of the jersey just before. Yeah, it's a recognizable stance that you could see kids in the future, you know, trying to replicate and copy.
Ooh, Jake, I really like this one from the 253. What I Need to Know. What will we see first? KJ re-signed or an Adams deal?
That's
a good question.
Great.
I think a Jamal Adams deal, just because I think it is the biggest priority, but
if KJ Wright's going to get signed, Stacey, it's going to be KJ. If the Seahawks aren't going to sign him, if Adams' deal gets done and KJ Wright is not a Seahawk, I don't think he becomes a Seahawk in 2021, because I don't think Adams' deal is going to get done just before training camp. So that's my prediction. I don't think that you're going to see it, you know, relatively soon here in the summer months. Maybe you see it in June, but my anticipation is that deal will probably get done in July, and I would anticipate that KJ, if he was going to be on this team and they're able to negotiate and strike up a deal, it would happen much, much sooner than that.
What I Need to Know, if you can only eat one food/meal for the rest of your life, what would it be? Korean barbecue is mine. That's what the texter says. Korean barbecue, good, but
Korean
not my
barbecue,
choice.
Really?
My choice would be... am I boring if I say pizza? gosh, pizza's so good. No, I wouldn't want to give it up.
You definitely want to be boring for that. I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I don't know if this is like my true answer, but this is what I'm feeling right now in the moment, Stacey. As you asked me that question, this is what I'm feeling. Hibachi grill. So just anything like hibachi
like
chicken,
if I allowed
hibachi steak, veggies, rice, like that. It's such an underrated meal, and I get you filled up every single time. The flavor is so good, and Stacey, you know what? The entertainment value is incredible.
What I need to know from the 206, today is National Washington Day. What do you love most about our state? I'll tell you what I don't love, and it's hiking, and that's controversial, but your girl is single. Every dating profile that's ever out there is just people that love to hike. I don't like to hike. Hiking is boring. Hiking makes me tired. I don't have hiking attire, and I'm tired of it. I hate that everyone loves to hike all over the place all the time. Don't you want to do something else?
Do you really believe that that's the case, or do you think that they're just trying to make themselves you know, look cool, look adventurous?
It is like the same reason, Jake, that I have found the only three pictures that exist of me outside and put them on that profile to make it look as though I am more outdoorsy and adventurous than I am. It's like every guy is holding a fish or he's hiking. Every person. So I'm not going to choose hiking. I'm going to choose the weather. I love that we have seasons. That is my favorite thing about our state.
That's funny. Well, the people are starting to become very concerned here because they're wondering if Brian knows about you having a dating profile.
Oh, gosh. I totally forgot. No, I'm not single. I have a boyfriend. No, you're right. That's sorry. Totally forgot that I do have a boyfriend that is real. Tough. His name is Brian. He's an astronaut and a doctor.
Wow, he's just up in space doing his missions, and now he just found out.
He doesn't know that you have dating profiles here. That's incredible. I will say my favorite part is easily the summer. The summer here in Washington, hands down, there is nothing that beats it. When you have the summer and you've got, you know, the all the lakes, you've got the Puget Sound. I mean, it's breathtaking. And sometimes you don't really fully appreciate it until, you know, when you get up in a plane, you leave SeaTac Airport, and you get up and you're able to see it from a bird's eye view.
This place is
gorgeous. This place is beautiful, and we live in an amazing part of the country, and the summertime is when it's at its peak.
Completely agree. Also, I really need too many people telling me you need to text Brian. Let him know. My bad.
You do. I'm very concerned about this.
Totally.
But you can't just say my bad. There's a much deeper conversation that needs to happen here.
Did I very briefly forget I have a fictional boyfriend? Yeah, but like, he's real, so I it's fine. What I need to know, with the Rams offense no longer a new thing. Okay, I like where this is going. So this is from the 661. With the Rams offense no longer a new thing, how do we know the Hawks will have success? So 661, I hope this is what you're getting at, but I'm assuming they mean like the Rams in 2018 in particular took the league by storm. Now that more teams are using 11 personnel or know how to have basically figured that out, why do we think that Shane Waldron coming from that system is going to come in and revolutionize what Seattle's doing?
One, I don't think that they're going to do exactly the same thing that they did before. But I also believe that you have different personnel. You have different styles. This isn't about trying to make DK Metcalf or Tyler Lockett be Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods. This is about maximizing what they can do, their strengths and their style in the offensive scheme or system. And it's about being able to help those guys be able to do more than what they've done in the past, be able to find ways to get them the football in more creative ways. And that is why I believe that this offense is going to add something different to it and add something that won't be predictable and won't be the product of just what you've seen before.
Yeah.
The other aspect of it too is that what has everybody been basically, you know, pining for over the last, you know, however many seasons is tempo, diversity, attack, get Russell Wilson feeling in his best, and that is when he is in up-tempo situations. And this offense, Stacey, they are going to be in an attack mindset. They will play with great tempo in a variety of different ways, and I think Seahawks fans are going to be very excited to see Russell Wilson in that attack mode with this offense, with this style of tempo that Sean McVay and this group has created. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
A great answer, Jake. I am very excited to see what it looks like. It'll be one of our stories for this team heading into the season. That'll do it for us today. He is Jake Heaps. I'm Stacey Ross. DJ Wilder filling in on the board. Jake and Stacey, we will be back with you guys tomorrow, but do not go anywhere because Wyman and Bob coming your way next on 710 ESPN Seattle.